There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you all along. Live local talk over the hour, and you're a big part of it. Text line is open. Phone line is open at 343-0106. Might as well put that in your contacts list. Just put FM Talk 106.5 or radio station, whatever. I'm not here to control your life. I'm just offering you some information. Phone number 251 for those of y'all not around here, or if you're dialing from South Baldwin, maybe 251-343-0106. And it's good to have my buddy James Patterson, Alabama Consumer Law, back in studio with me. And now you've moved your office closer to our studios, so that's good for me.
Yes, that is good. It's good for my clients too.
You can come over here, have lunch with us sometime or something like that.
That sounds good.
All right, good deal. You and I have been talking about consumer issues here over the years, and I will circle back around to one of the big ones we've talked about, and that is the Equifax breach.
Yes.
I want to get to that and what's been done, what's not been done on that. But let's go to the top of the stack here. You sent me a story the other day, and from a page-turning publication, National Law Review. I'm glad there's folks like you that read this, because it's important stuff in here about the TCPA, and Supreme Court has to make a decision to defer or not to defer. First of all, what is that acronym? What are we talking about?
Yeah, that's the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. And what that is it's an act to deal with phone calls and text messages that comes from unwanted parties. So, for example...
Oh, I get those.
Yeah, we all get those. Every day we get these multiple times. And what it is, it was enacted in 1991, and it's supposed to be one of these statutes that protects our data or protects information. So if for some reason you get these unsolicited robocalls, as they call them, this statute is supposed to keep companies from doing that to us. Of course, everybody that's listening sitting here going, well, James, every day.
Yeah, there's not a one of us that doesn't have it stacked up.
No, you get tons of them. And what it's supposed to do, and it back in 1991, the primary focus of it was phone calls and faxes.
Y'all, in the copy here, this case is based around junk faxes. And I remember those days, people would send, you would get all kind of stuff. The fax machine would be going all day burning through paper because of ridiculousness.
For like a cruise, you know, yes. You get the 10-night cruise.
Y'all remember those? Remember the junk faxes?
Yeah. And they're still around, and that's where this case comes from, is these junk faxes coming into businesses. And big businesses still, a lot of people still use fax machines today. So, and it applies, this TCPA applies to faxes as well as text and phone calls. And so
unsolicited communication.
That's right.
Whether it be by a fax or on your cell phone.
That's right, unsolicited. So in this case, it's complicated type case, but the nutshell of the case is the Supreme Court going to make a determination on how the TCPA is viewed going forward? Because the last couple of years, there's been lots of TCPA lawsuits in the country, mostly class action type stuff.
Okay.
Against some of the big guys, you know, your AT&T's, your Verizon, some of these big companies that maybe shouldn't have sent information to consumers because they weren't, you know, signed up or not, you know, were signed up or not signed up. So there's been lots of classes against casinos and smaller companies. And part of this case is to figure out, do we use the FCC interpretation of the TCPA or let the court sort of use their own interpretation?
Okay.
So, and that's the importance of that case. So it's going to be sort of what direction is this type of information going to go, or these kind of cases are going to go under the TCPA? But from a practical standpoint...
Yeah, so what does it mean to... Yeah.
Yeah, for us, are we still going to be inundated by calls? Yes. They're still going to keep coming in because the one issue that is hard to control under these, and we get clients call up all the time about this, is, hey, I'm getting a call from somebody in India or Pakistan or this fake call. What can I do to stop that? And unless it's a real company, then there's really nothing.
Right, they're criminals. I mean, it's like saying, you know, if you can find them, great.
But yeah, if you can find them, great. But the problem is that you can't regulate against that. So it's not really going to stop those kind of calls.
But from companies that have a shingle out, have an address, have a website.
That's right. It may slow those down some, or I think some of it may have been slowing down over the years because of the amount of TCPA cases out there. So it's just one of those things to look at. And really what happens, a lot of people, when you sign up for things with, you know, a credit card, or you go to the store and you purchase something, in the fine print, you're agreeing that, hey, you can contact me.
Okay, yeah, you read my mind on that. By the way, just joining us, James Patterson, consumer attorney. And when you say solicited versus non-solicited, you know, you sign up for something, and we'll see the big things that say, don't share my email.
That's right.
I don't want to know about special offers. I don't want to, you know, those things that people are clicking. But the fact that you're doing business with somebody, like if I go and sign up for whatever thing it is online, you know, the Alabama Deer Hunting Report or whatever it is, and I say, don't share my info and don't do this. But have I said that I'm open to solicitation? Because I'm now... They're not a stranger to me. I went to their website and clicked, I want to do their product.
That's right. And you have. You've basically said, hey, you can share. You can call me up at any time.
So now they can get to call it.
That's right. You have permission to solicit me. Now, you can revoke that. A lot of people don't know that. So
I'd be wondering, how do you do that?
Yeah, you would have to give them a call, or I think the best way is, you know, you send some kind of correspondence.
I'm going to call them right at dinner time and tell them I don't.
And do it 12 times.
That's right.
Right.
I call them right at dinner and say, I don't want to be on your list.
So you can revoke it. And then also you can sign up for the national do not call list. I don't know if you've heard of that.
We've talked about
that maybe before on here. So you can sign up for that. So if you get calls from a particular type of, you know, you don't know where they're coming from, or maybe it's somebody you signed up, you can go on that list and add your name to that.
Yeah, but once again, this cycles back to, if there's a criminal enterprise doing it, they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care at all, because they're going to be long gone and doing it from another fake entity that they've come up with.
Speaking of fake entities, the proliferation of hiding numbers and having telephone numbers at number one that have not only your area code, but let's say your prefix very close to being very close to your own number showing up calling.
That's right. And that has started happening even more in the last year. I mean, I'll get those kind of calls and I'm thinking, oh,
like that's really close to my number.
Yeah, that's my number, or man, that's really close. And I think that's something that may be addressed going forward with the TCPA. I mean, it's one of these acts that with some cases have come out over the years. It's adjusted a little bit for our times, but I don't think it's quite there yet. So it needs to get there. But that's just, again, another way of solicitors and telemarketers and stuff to try to get into our phones. And, I mean, they know we all have our phones all the time. This is
correct.
The way to communicate with us.
So the better move here, you said one of two options, either running with what the FCC already has as a directive or letting the courts decide it. Do you have an opinion here? Which one's
the
better?
I don't think I have a full opinion yet on it. I mean, I think the way the FCC has interpreted looks pretty good, and the FCC gets a lot of input from people, you know, us consumers, and so they get a lot of that information come in and sort of regurgitate it out and say, hey, maybe this should be policy for this particular statute. So but I'm curious to see how our current Supreme Court's going to come back on that.
Well, I think, you know, if you look at a vibe of populism, if that vibe resonates at all in the Supreme Court, which I hope vibes don't resonate in the Supreme Court, but if it did, I would say this is unpopular.
I would hope so. I hope it's very unpopular and they want to do something to protect us consumers.
All right, coming right back, because we'll talk about that in the form of breaches, not your britches, no, breaches, like happened at Marriott. When I saw the number of the people that were involved in that Marriott breach, I thought it was a misprint. But James, you tell me, though, it really is like half a billion
people. Yep.
Wow. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
118 FM Talk 106.5. Talking to my buddy James Patterson, Alabama consumer law, Alabama consumer attorney. And I do want to get in the breach story, but I run through a couple texts we got during the break here. Jordan says, I've had my own phone number appear on my caller ID from a telemarketer.
Yeah, and I've actually had that happen to me too. And it's the way the computer system's in place and the way these guys are getting our information, it's just crazy how these things can come in and you don't know what's going on with your phone system.
I ignore. If I don't have you as a contact and you don't text me, I ignore you.
I'm the same way.
Or leave a message. But in the case of my own phone number calling me, then I would probably end up answering it because it'd be like, what's going on? Wrong here?
And that's what I did. And it was some kind of beeping noise and some kind of background noise. I couldn't quite tell. So I hung up real quick because I figured, oh, this is some kind of scam or something, and did a little Googling. And that's a practice that's out there.
This one here, Skip says, how does the do not call list work when you get the app that disguises the phone number you're calling from? In other words, if you have an app that changes your number you're dialing from, and I report that because I got a solicitation call and I'm on a do not call list, can they actually track that false number back to the caller?
I don't think the technology is there yet for that. And that's just, again, it's one of those things where the do not call list works great for more national type collection agencies and stuff. But these scammers out of all these other countries are changing numbers left and right.
Yeah, if they're criminals, none of this stuff's going to
work. Yeah, none of it's going to work very well.
Well, okay, speaking of the criminals, they love a breach, right? why do they breach data? Because why do they breach big companies? Because that's where the data is, right?
That's kind of
like a Bonnie and Clyde thing. The Marriott breach.
Yes.
This thing is big.
It's big, and it just happened this week in the news. Yeah. And again, another breach. We talked about the Equifax breach last year, and you know, we have smaller breaches in the news all the time, but this one's almost a half a billion folks total breach. I mean, half billion, not a half million, a half billion.
500 million, y'all.
Yeah, and the breach has been going on since 2014. It's credit card numbers, it's names, it's addresses, passport information. That's a big deal because a lot of the people affected are also European folks and people that do a lot of traveling. Obviously, it's a hotel.
Well, Marriott. It could also be a secondary ID if somebody's trying to, you know what I'm saying? If you're going on and they'll say, okay, yeah, well, you have this number, but I need your passport thing.
It is, exactly. And one thing, and just glancing through some of the news stories about this the last couple of days, I think somebody from, you know, one of our government agencies said, look, we have diplomats and people stay at Marriott's all the time.
Uh-huh.
And so this data is out there. I mean, that's going to compromise some things for the government. And I just saw this morning where they think maybe the people that have breached, or the, you know, the bad guys, could be possibly out of China.
You don't say.
Yeah, I know. It's shocking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this data is out there. You know, I think we've talked about before, it seems like it's either China or North Korea or you know, one of these countries doing this kind of stuff. So this stuff gets, you know, down on the dark web. We've talked about the dark web before.
Right.
It's that underlying the regular web that has all our data and information out there that can get sold to people and can get used to blackmail or open up stuff on your credit and do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, that's how it usually affects us as, you know, regular folks. Is probably not a big chance of blackmail or espionage, but there is a chance of us going, what do you mean you go to apply for something and I have bad credit and I hadn't paid bills? You're like, I don't have one of those cards.
That's where it happens. I have clients come in and they'll tell me, you know, I went to go get a house and I have things open up on my credit. Well, you know, the only thing you can do is to always check your credit kind of constantly. You know, there's credit.
Constantly meaning what?
There's credit karma. That's a good side I've told folks about. That's a good one that just sort of regulates. And if something
What is the one that you do? I do it on my birthday. The free one.
The free annual creditreport.com. That's the one
because there's some imitators, but
that's right. That's freeannualcreditreport.com. That's the government backed website.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go on there once a year and order a free copy of your credit report. And then your own credit cards do a lot of monitoring as well for free for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the service. You know, Discover Card may have the Equifax. You know, one of your other credit cards may have TransUnion. So if you have multiple credit cards, you can probably get all three of your credit reporting agencies, the big guys, being looked at all times. And we just have to be vigilant with our stuff. I've told people, it's almost like your health. You have to be paying attention to your health just like you have to be paying attention to your credit. I mean, you just have to know what's going on because all our data is out there, especially from that Equifax breach.
Well, that's what worries me, because I want to get to that and compare that with what you said about Marriott. So Marriott had, as far back as 2014, this breach going on.
That's right. And they knew about it initially, and then I don't know if they thought they solved the problem or thought it was just such a small breach, no big deal. But apparently the data that was coming in from, it was registration, people go in and register and the information's put on there. The hackers just kept collecting that data, and it kept coming in for the next years over and over again. So they're collecting this massive amount of data. That's how you get up to 500 million people. Yeah. Is it takes you a couple years to get all that data.
Well, because that's my worry. It was at a shorter time period, but I remember on the Equifax one, I think they made the announcement like in late August or September, but it was shown that they had known about it maybe as early as July.
That's right. It had gone on for a while, and they just sort of, they did an internal investigation.
That's the negligence. They didn't, they weren't the ones that did the hacking, but if they got breached and they knew about it and they let it go on months before they told we the people, that's my problem.
That's a problem. And Marriott, I guess they figured out here recently that the breach was still continuing, so they let people know. But the one funny thing about the Marriott situation is they emailed everybody that was affected from this third-party email servicer that apparently they have a contract with. So the email that it comes from looks like a fake email to begin with.
Oh, gosh.
And so hackers could easily change up that email by a letter or two, because Marriott's got, two R's.
Yes.
Drop a T or drop a R, because I wouldn't notice that. Right. And you click a little link, and now you're given even more data because you're hacked and
oh my gosh,
thinking Marriott really cares about you. So it's just a big mess. I mean, this data hacking stuff. And right now, there's really no big protections in place from Congress to help us out on this thing.
Is it more like, I remember we talked about this, it seems like, and states, attorneys general, I don't know how many states got together on this, we're trying to force the hand here.
Yeah, on Equifax, there was lots of state attorney generals filed a class action lawsuit, essentially, to hold Equifax accountable for, and that's still going through the court system as we sit here today. California has passed some consumer statutes regarding this data breach type stuff. Most states now have on the books where if a company has a data breach, they got to notify the AG's office and people within a certain amount of time. So there's been some movement, but the question still becomes, how are you going to hold these companies financially liable? Because that seems to be the only thing that's going to make them change their ways and protect our data.
Right. But, and they have to do a better job. Problem is and they, will do a better job, then the hackers will do a better job, and it escalates out there. I just wonder, and I want to get to, before we run out of time, what have they done in Congress since last year? Remember, they were going to do all this stuff? Remember all the rhetoric?
Oh, yeah. And there was a lot. Yeah.
Bipartisan. They're all going to get it fixed. They were serious about this.
That's right. They were going to work on it, mm-hmm. and just sort of mm-hmm. has gone nowhere. So.
You don't say.
Yeah, I know. I'm shocked. That it's just sort of sitting. There's been some movement here and there, but there's really no universal agreement on what kind of protections we can put in place to help us consumers, at least not at the moment.
I don't know what it looks like, James, but just my gut feeling on this is it has to come back to the individual versus the group. You can't. These breaches, you're putting the most sensitive, the most important things out there in today's world. That is your information.
Yes.
And we're putting it in the hands of third parties that, through maybe no fault of their own or through extreme negligence or somewhere in between, mm-hmm. they get this information gets out. I don't know what it is, and I haven't pictured it yet, but there's got to be something at the individual level to be able to protect yourself. In other words, you don't put this information out that can be breached. You put information out to these people, but it can't be used. You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. And I think there's some things that are being worked on by some of the credit bureaus themselves, apps and different things where you can lock your credit report. And you can do a lot of that stuff now. But it's a hosh-posh of stuff.
Right.
It's all out there. There's no really universal thing yet.
And a quick lock-unlock for your credit, I think, would be.
And that's something that's supposed to be coming real soon. With the credit bureaus, with especially with Equifax, and I think they're supposed to release some kind of product here maybe in 2019 where a quick lock and unlock.
Where you take that responsibility on yourself.
That's
versus
right.
Analogy of the roadways, right? That we put seatbelts on individually to protect ourselves. There's mm-hmm. laws that say people got to stop at stop signs. There's laws that say you got to stop at a stoplight. You can't speed. You can't drink and drive.
That's right.
The laws are out there, but these things happen, so there's at least some element where we can do something individually to protect ourselves.
And I think that's coming, especially with technology nowadays. I mean, we can do a lot with our phones and computers, and we can protect ourselves, but we just got to be real vigilant on our, data, keeping an eye on it, keeping knowing what's going on, keeping an eye on your credit, not ignoring your credit situation, going for years without, hey, I haven't checked my credit. I get a lot of clients where, hey, I haven't checked my credit in years.
Well, you know what? It's easy to do that. I know, I mean, because you do this every day. You think about it every day. But whether we're whistling past the graveyard or we got a million other things to do, it's almost like you got to build a habit, I guess.
That's true. And you need to get in some kind of form of habit to check this stuff and do it, you know, once every couple of months and stay on top of things. Because right now, all of our data is out there somewhere in the dark web or with some company or some illegal.
Is that fair to assume that, I mean, after the Equifax and after all that, there's our information's out there somewhere.
It's out there, and it's just a matter of somebody getting together and pulling all the data points to use to open up a credit card or open up some kind of loan or do something negative to our credit. And like we've talked about before, by the time you realize something's happened to you, it's usually when you're trying to get credit for yourself.
Correct.
And this doesn't take 30 days to get fixed. I mean, this takes months and months and sometimes years to get this stuff off your credit.
Yeah, you know, when you and I first talked, I told you about my experience that happened through my social and taxes.
Yeah, that's right. That's
and
right.
We're somebody who files in October, and I went in that time and went to file. They said, no, you already filed in April. I said, I'm pretty sure.
Surprise.
Yeah, pretty sure I didn't file in April. And that took, and I, you know, knock on wood, I think we're, but I still have some of the trappings with a PIN number and some extra things I have to do when I'm filing taxes. That this is 5, 6, 7 years.
Oh, yeah. And it can affect you for years and years to come. And I tell clients that all the time, that just because if you had an incident one time, now you got to be mindful of going forward and really staying on top of things.
So you've got 1 minute here. The best way to keep an eye on the credit is to do what? To do that once a year thing, but what else?
Yeah,
would you
once
do?
A year thing. You know, credit cards. They'll keep monitoring stuff. Pay attention to things. If something pops up that you know says, hey, somebody's checked your credit, make sure it's you and not somebody else. Credit Karma is a good way that they'll put notices on your you know, you'll get email or text messages about something's changed. Always be looking for some kind of change to your credit report. That's the key, because if there's someone looking at your credit already before they open something, there's going to be an inquiry into it. So that's kind of your first key on, hey, something's up with my credit.
All right, somebody wants to get in touch with you, ask you specific questions, how do they do it?
Just visit us at allalaw.com, allalaw.com, and shoot us an email on that.
As always, man, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you, John.
All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. And we'll talk some food. That's pretty good going into the holidays here. Some great Alabama recipes. That's on the way next right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Big thanks to James Patterson, Alabama consumer law attorney. And yeah, I'm getting more emails here and questions about other breaches. What was that one, Dalton? There's another. What was this? An Aramark breach or something like that? Listen, I really think long term, if we could figure out, I don't know what it is, I don't have the answer yet, but still push on those companies that have our data to do the best to protect it. But if there's something you can do, whether it is credit freeze or those kind of things, trust in yourself more than, I mean, because eventually you assume that there's a breach. Some breach is going to happen that involves you. I mean, today it's this, it's Marriott, today it's another company, whatever it is. Eventually the bell will toll for you in a data breach and your information will be out there. And then they'll say, well, I'm sorry. We tried to keep it from... Well, how do you prevent it from being done? You got to take care of it yourself. When I get that answer, other than just a credit freeze, I'll give it to you. All right. I mentioned we were talking food, and that's great because Marty Duncan is in with, I'd say, the printed cover of this Alabama Cravings book here in just, about 7, 8 pictures makes me extremely hungry. Just the pictures, Marty, this is fantastic.
Thank you. We really wanted to have the pictures tell the story. A lot of people love to read and read recipes, but you eat with your eyes first. I don't care what anybody says.
I can guarantee you do here. And what great seafood on here. And, of course, I see some ribs and, of course, biscuits and cakes. And this is the most requested recipes from Alabama restaurants past and present. So, first of all, thanks for being on. You haven't been in here before, but we're glad to get you on now. And let's talk about this book and how this all started.
All right. Well, so I did a book a couple of years ago, as I don't know what was wrong with me. I was asked to do the wrap-up party for the Eat, Drink, Ride Eat, Drink, Read, Write Festival in Birmingham. Okay. I said, well, to commemorate it, why don't we just do a cookbook? And they're like, well, it's in 2 months. I'm like, eh, how hard could it be? Well, a lot harder than I realized, but I kind of got in a groove. So then the next year, people are like, well, why don't you do another one so you can do all the things that you didn't get to do with the first one because you didn't have enough time. So last year we put out a book called Magic City Cravings, the most requested recipes from Birmingham restaurants past and present. And that was such a big hit, but everybody started calling and emailing like, what about my hometown? What about where I'm from? What about Baldwin County? What about Mobile County? What about, you know, Etowah County? What about, and I'm like, okay. So I pitched the idea to the Alabama Natural Gas Association, and they gave me the funding to go around the state of Alabama. I spent 4 months traveling the state, and we got the fans and friends to pitch in their ideas for the recipes they wanted me to get. And I just went to the chefs and the restaurants and said, please give me these recipes. And they said no. I said, please. And I think they realized I wasn't going away, so they all gave them to me.
Okay, so these are coming from these restaurants that are so famous in our state, so loved in our state, and things that we go, or the first thing when we go, if you go there, you gotta get this.
That's what the book's all about.
Okay.
Plus, I've got a map in there that shows all the places that we went, and so it's some good ideas for like a road trip or a weekend getaway. You can see all the different restaurants we visited. Now, you gotta read that. And then we have this great part you're in now, this famous folks crave section. Now, David Holloway, I know everybody here knows David. David helped write the intro to that section because he's one of the best known food people in Alabama. And so he talks about, you know, why we live in Alabama. Why do we live in Alabama? For the food.
Life is made better by food.
It's true, isn't it? So anyway, we got all these famous people to give us their favorite food craving. So I drove around for 5,000 miles. And, you know, when you're on the road, you got to have a playlist. So I also have an Alabama music playlist of my favorite songs with Alabama roots. But some of these cravings from some of these favorite famous folks are just too good.
You weren't playing either. You're talking about some of the biggest names in the state. I mean, I'm looking at Randy Owen right off the bat. Randy, who is like 6'26" or whatever he is, a tall, you know, what's his favorite? What was his favorite thing?
His favorite was, at first he said, my mama's biscuits. And then they sent a note back and were like, you better say my sister too, because I guess if he went to the sister's house, he didn't want to get left out. So he said his mother and his sister's biscuits, which are both different. One's kind of a cat head biscuit, and the other one's a little bit more like a drop biscuit, but with homemade butter, because, you know, Randy raises cows, and then with sorghum. So that was his craving. And who wouldn't want that anyway? I mean, that just sounds great, doesn't it?
Yeah, that just sounds like home.
Yes, it does. And then we have people that, instead of giving us a craving, they gave us like a memory. And like Bo Jackson told me the story of when his was 5 years old, some days they didn't have anything but cornbread. And one day his sister was going to make, he had 11 children in the family, his sister was going to make the cornbread. He was 5 years old. She sent him to the store with a quarter to get cornmeal. And he said he guarded that quarter all the way to the store. He said, in that minute, I felt like Jeff Bezos. You know, he said he. And then Spooner Oldham, one of the Swampers, you know, one of the Muscle Shoals gang. Spooner, I had seen him at David Hood's birthday party that they had at the Shoals Theater.
Wow.
And I said,
cool places.
Well, yeah, I just didn't want to leave any stone unturned.
Well, that's
so I asked Spooner, I'm like, hey, Spooner, would you give me your favorite food craving for the book? And he said, yeah, it's easy for me. It's my mama's biscuits and chocolate gravy. Well, chocolate gravy's a North Alabama thing. You don't hear about it down here.
If everybody could see my face right now, because I'm looking at Marty going, biscuits. Chocolate gravy?
Chocolate gravy. It's a very North Alabama thing, as is chicken stew. North Alabama has their own thing. We've got our gumbos.
Chocolate gravy.
We've got our shrimp boils. They've got their chicken stew, and they've got their biscuits and chocolate gravy.
Huh.
Yes. So anyway, so Spooner says, my favorite's biscuits and chocolate gravy. And his wife pops up, and she goes, yeah, when Spooner took me home to meet his mama for the first time, she was making biscuits and chocolate gravy, and I knew right then I'd met my people. I thought that was cute. That's one of my favorite stories in the book.
Well, I love this, too. There's a pair of men right here that have both been in that chair and talked on the show. And the other's end of the state, the non-chocolate gravy end of the state, we're lucky to have the seafood we do. And now you got Jimbo Better talking about crab.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
That's a great story. He told a story about going down to the beach at the Grand Hotel, and Gertie Pearl would cook up the soft shell crab in a cast iron skillet right there on the beach. Just the visual, and then those soft shells coming out of the hot grease. Can you just imagine how good that was?
Did you realize? I mean, when you talked to Winston Grimm, you would get a shrimp.
I made him give me barbecued shrimp. No, I made him do that.
Shrimp.
He said shrimp, of course, with a cold beer, and I said, "Can I embellish that a little bit?" Because I knew everybody would think that was great.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and you know, how about that? Rick Bragg and Mark Childress, all these famous authors, gave me a nice quote, and then Lucy Buffett story about stealing water.
Wait. So that's where I was going to go. I said, while we stay in Baldwin County, let's talk about Lulu. Let's talk about Lucy. And not only is we're talking about food here, she's talking about...
I think the statute of limitations is worn out.
Grand theft watermelon going on here. Okay, so what does she say about watermelon here?
Oh, it's just a cute story, sort of like a little essay. I tell people we've got quips, quotes, and essays. And it's just a little story about her and her girlfriends. She didn't name anybody, so don't worry, y'all. stealing watermelons, and nothing tasted better, she said, than those watermelons in the middle of the summer when she was a kid. This wasn't last week. She was a teenager.
Like you said, statute of limitations has run. You know, it's amazing, too, is when I opened this, seriously, this recipe right here was a conversation that went on an hour and a half on our way. Can this be more Alabama? Conversation on our way to Tuscaloosa a couple weekends ago to go to the Iron Bowl. The wife and I talking about Lane cake, and her mother had said something about Lane cake, and my wife was shocked because she's a good baker and said,
I don't know
what it is.
She felt like
she was delving into everything research-wise and Googling. She was shocked. She goes, I don't know what this is, and it's an Alabama cake, Lane cake.
Yeah, and it was made famous, I think. I mean, it was one of those things back in the day. What I've read is it was one of those things back in the day that got shared around, sort of like a hummingbird cake or one of those types of things. Now the strawberry cake has sort of made its way around. But... the Lane cake was made famous in To Kill a Mockingbird. And there's a kind of a funny quote from Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird. And those of you who've read the book might remember it. I'll just read it really quick. It says, it's in chapter 13. Scout relates that Miss Maudie Atkinson baked a Lane cake so loaded with shiny, it made me tight. And my commentary was, anybody from Alabama knows that shiny is a reference to moonshine, but I doubt I need to tell anybody what tight means. Anyway, and so the cool thing is that Scout was played by Mary Badham, who got an Academy Award nomination, the youngest one, I think, ever. And Mary also gave me an Alabama food craving.
Really?
Oh, yes, she did. So.
See, I like this works okay, and it's linked through. And what?
Yes.
It wasn't Lane cake?
No, it was, she talks about... Betty Harris was her family cook, and like Calpurnia, she cooked everything in a cast iron skillet, and she her craving was quail on a bed of rice and pour gravy over it and put collard greens on the side.
She and I may be kinfolk at some point.
Yes, we might be related.
That's one of my favorite. I love that right there.
Well, you've got to read this one. So you know my friend Matt Murphy from 99.5 in Birmingham, and I know you said poor Marty.
I'm sorry. He does a similar thing that what I do here, he does this in Birmingham. He's been on the show with us a couple times.
Well, so Andrea Lindenberg, who's on the show with him, she does a pretty funny Kay Ivey impersonation. And so she read the governor's favorite craving, which is right here.
What is it?
Do I have to do it in the Kay Ivey voice?
I have enough Kay Ivey cuts over here. I can probably piece it together. In your own words, what does she say?
So this is what the governor said her favorite Alabama food memory is. She said, my favorite Alabama food memory is from growing up in Camden, eating my mother's, wait for it, congealed tuna salad for lunch on a hot summer day.
Oh, I didn't need that. After you had built my appetite up.
I'm not sure.
Congealed tuna salad on a hot summer day.
But I didn't have the heart to leave it out because one thing is that is her craving, so okay.
Maybe that's why she pardoned the turkeys the other day, the high-stepping turkeys, because she wanted time for congealed tuna salad. Now, okay, Marty, where do we get a copy of Alabama Cravings?
Okay, so come see me tonight, y'all. I'm going to be here in town. I'm here for doing a few signings around Baldwin and Mobile counties. And tonight I'm going to be at the Books a Million here in Mobile. And I know a lot of you will be getting off work. So I'm supposed to start at 6, and I may be there just a little bit early so if I can catch you on the way home from work or something. But it's got not only these great quotes and cravings, it's got recipes from all the Bushwhacker, the Alabama white sauce.
That's We've right. Got, and that was the last I mean, thing. I turned to that. My late father-in-law gave me that recipe because he's from
Decatur.
But Big Bob Gibson is, but he's from up in that same area. He was from New Hope, or as they called it, No Hope, up there in North Alabama. And he turned me on years and years ago to white barbecue sauce. I had never seen that before. And we'd go up and we'd go to Big Bob Gibson's, and I learned about it. And then he said, okay, here's how, because I said, how do you make it? How do you make
barbecue
sauce?
Well, that's the original recipe.
What's in here? I'm looking at it.
Yes, and it looks delicious, doesn't it? Look at those ribs, too, and that chicken. They're known for that. But what about that Mr. Bill Bailey Jr. gave me the original Bailey's West Indies salad? And then I got Chef Steve Zucker up at the top at Dolphins up there.
Yes.
That Mobile stew, he's famous for that. He gave me that recipe. He also gave me a really great cocktail recipe from Dolphins. And then Bob Baumhauer, my sweet friend Bob Baumhauer, gave me the Bam Bam shrimp from Baumhauer's. I got the Al Sawyer over at King Neptune's gave me his coconut shrimp, which made the cover. Mm-hmm. The Hangout, everybody loves the shark attack at the Hangout, and they gave me that. Mojitos.
I'm looking at this. All these recipes are in here in the book. And if you doubted, which I don't think you would, that Marty's one of us and down home, I open up to another page, and I'm looking at the Pride of Nanafalia, Ezell's Fish Camp,
and they have never
puppies.
Given that recipe out. Can you? And I nagged that poor Agnew Ezell until he gave me that recipe, and I just wouldn't let him.
I'm making these this weekend. I love their hush puppies up at Ezell's, so that's in this book.
Y'all, from Lavaca. Awesome. Lavaca, yes. Alabama. Y'all, I'm telling you, people were so nice to give me these recipes. These chefs gave me really almost everything I asked for. There was one here that I wanted that I didn't get, but I got something equally as good.
Uh-huh.
So that's the crab bisque from Ed's I got in place of something else I asked for and I couldn't get. But the Ed's crab bisque is to die for good. Then Panini Pete,
yes.
I'm signing there tomorrow for First Friday and for the parade. We'll be in the courtyard at the French Quarter with Café Au Lait and beignets. But can you believe he gave me that beignet recipe?
Pete's a good guy.
Pete's an awesome guy. Are you kidding me? Does a lot for the community and a lot for veterans. And
yes, he does.
I'm a big fan of that guy.
Yeah, as are we. This is, Marty, fantastic. This book looks fantastic. Once again, this starts, you said, a little bit early.
I'm supposed to be there at 6, but I might get there a little early if they'll let me. And that way, if you're coming home from work, you can swing by Books a Million and pick up a couple copies. And they make great Christmas presents.
Holy
and
cow,
secret
yes.
Santa presents. And it doesn't matter if you want to cook or you just want to take a road trip, it'll be great. And if you want to find me, I've got a website for the book called alabamacravings.com, and it has a list of all the places I'll be signing around the state and the dates and the times, and you can even order online if you can't get out. So but anyway, we are going to fund a culinary scholarship with part of the proceeds of this book, and I felt that way would help all of our restaurants. But it's going to be at the new Rain Culinary Science Center that's being built at Auburn, so we'll be able to help somebody go to culinary school.
This may be the tastiest way to fund an education ever. Y'all check it out, Alabama Cravings, the most requested recipes from Alabama restaurants, past and present. Marty Duncan, thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, y'all check it out. We'll put a link up on our Facebook page as well. Coming right back, this is Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
155 FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. Big thank you to Marty Duncan. It's a great looking book, Alabama Cravings, the most requested recipes from Alabama restaurants, past and present. And those of you like Dalton and I that know how good those hush puppies are up at Ezell's, up at on the river on Highway 10. I've got that recipe right in front of me. It's one of the many in this book. Also, we've been talking about tonight, the charity bartender, the 12 Bartenders of Christmas event, getting kicked off at Fairhope Brewing Company. A charitable soul is Brian Kane from Fairhope Brewing Company, because he's having us back out. Well, I guess we didn't break, well, we broke a few things last year, but you got them fixed and we can come back out now, right?
Right, yeah, the real charitable part, like you said, is letting you guys come in here and wreak havoc on us.
Well, this is a lot of fun. We were telling folks we'll be out there starting at 5 and pouring those beers, and then 100% of y'all's tips go to Wilmer Hall. But we're kicking this off tonight, but you have other people coming out doing the same thing for different charities.
Exactly. We got, we don't do exactly 12 anymore. We kind of go Big Ten style on it. We just have however many. We still call them the 12 bartenders.
You keep the name. That's good.
Exactly. We've got some great charities. I said you guys are starting it off for us tonight, benefiting Wilmer Hall. We got some folks at Mobile Baykeeper coming out. Father Steve Williams from St. Lawrence Church is coming out to benefit the Vincent DePaul Society. Fairhope City Council helps the Fairhope Schools up here. Doctors Association. And,
are you inside one of the vats? Because I'm losing your cell phones. Did you get inside one of the beer vats? Because I all of a sudden couldn't hear you.
Sorry.
There we go. It's a little bit better. All right. There we go. That's good. So, by the way, just joining us, talking to Brian Kane with Fairhope Brewing Company. We're out there tonight at 5 o'clock for the charity bartender event. And tell folks who have not been out lately, y'all are always doing something new for different seasons. What are they going to check out now? What's new on tap?
Well, I'll tell you the two that we're excited about at the moment are, we have a gingerbread stout. We did that one last year. We also have in bottles to get on draft called There's Something About Mary, M-E-R-R-Y. And that is a stout with orange zest and nutmeg. So it's kind of a holiday.
Hey, with nutmeg?
Yeah. It turned out really nicely. We've got about 6 weeks that we can really make dark beers in this state. Down in our part, that the weather works out for it, so we pile them in when we can. So we've got some great, it's gonna take me a while to learn you guys up on everything and show you where everything is again.
Yeah, that's where we can get there early. So I mean, because it is, as much as I'm a fan of the beers from Fairhope Brewing Company, they're always changing stuff on me too. So I'm having to learn the new ones and the seasonal ones. And remind folks too, we talked about this some a few weeks ago, but if they're looking for merchandise, you know, not only great packs of beer to give for the holidays, but y'all got some very cool logoed merchandise. You got it for sale at the store or at the brewery, but can they get it elsewhere?
We don't have an online store, but we are able to ship things, so we get folks to shoot us an email, info@fairhopebrewing.com, and I'll send you a picture of what shirts we have or any other kind of thing. This year we actually put together some gift baskets, so a couple of bottles with some gloves, huggers and things like that, to kind of get everything in one fell swoop there for the craft beer lover. If you're trying to get a little bit of everything, we try to do some of the work for you.
I dig it. I tell you what, I'll take a picture of some of those gift baskets tonight and share with y'all on Twitter. Brian, thank you. We'll see you in just a little bit out for the charity bartender event at Fairhope Brewing Company. Y'all come see us. That starts at 5 with us slinging beers. And we'll probably get real good at it by about 5:30, 5:45. We'll be there through the evening, so come out and say hello. Feinbaum Show on the way next. Talk to y'all again tomorrow morning.